Welcome back to Raising Tech, a podcast about all things technology and senior living. I'm your host, Patrick Leonard. So today we're going to talk about a very interesting solution for gait training, mobility, and falls prevention, which is always a hot topic for senior living communities. And I'm excited to welcome and introduce our guest to the listeners today, who's Craig Hillman from Gait Better. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Patrick. Glad to be here.
Awesome. We're happy to have you. So Craig, we met a few weeks ago at one of the Leading Age conferences out in Maryland. And, you know, you're immediately struck by the Gait Better team as you walk by the booth, as you know, they have the treadmill going and kind of the virtual reality experience, which of course we'll dive in more today. But can you start things off before we get too far into it by giving our listeners a little bit of background about yourself and Gait Better?
Sure, happy to. So I actually am relatively new to senior living, and I would say kind of health tech in general. My background actually is engineering. I actually was in what's called the software simulation space for a long time. The better way to describe it is reliability of electronics, making sure that that iPhone in your pocket doesn't fail when you don't want it to. But I had a great time in that space, actually founded a company, sold it just before COVID, God bless, and right around the same time, met the CEO and founder of Gait Better, Khalid Harari. And kind of initially, he was starting his company. I had just stopped running my own company and kind of offered to be just an informal advisor, help him kind of reach for the stars, so to speak. And really, over the 18 months, I had a chance to talk to Khalid. I was really inspired by him and really inspired by the technology and what it was doing in Israel. And all the amazing things, the outcomes, the embrace of the technology. He would share with me really just emotional, inspiring letters from spouses of people who had been on Gait Better, spouses who had not left the couch in 6 months, who were worried, who wouldn't leave the apartment because they were worried about falls, they were worried about walking, and really just having a transformational outcome, you know, without pills or without taking a class for like 12 months or longer. After kind of talking to Khalid for 18 months, I kind of looked around and said, you know what? I'm in a time in my life, I really would like to be inspired to help people to do good things. So I literally begged him to let me onboard to Gait Better and bring that technology here to the US. And that was about 2 years ago.
Wow, that's awesome. Thanks for providing that background. It's always fascinating to me to hear how people get into this crazy senior living space and where they've come from and what they've kind of built and worked on before. So thanks for providing that background. So for those who aren't as familiar with the concept, can you educate our listeners a little bit more about what is gait training? Why is it so important, specifically in the use case of senior living communities?
I'll take a step back, and what's been really inspiring is, so I have a PhD, and I'm not doing that to be a humble brag, but really to kind of give you just a little bit of insight. I was trained for a brief moment to kind of do research. And so joining Gait Better, you know, it was inspired by a lot of research coming out of Tel Aviv University and other institutions around the world. So, you know, in my free time late at night, I would kind of read some of these publications and really became kind of inspired by what I learned, not just for Gait Better, but really in for my own health. And hopefully, as I describe it, for the people living in senior living communities and the people helping those seniors in living communities. And what I found was, the best way to describe it is, walking is one of the best cognitive tasks you can do. So it turns out that walking in the real world is very cognitively demanding. And the way they explained it, when they explained it, it kind of made sense, right? Which is, you are multitasking like crazy when you are walking. You know that whole thing mom says, don't chew gum and walk at the same time? That's because you're thinking about all these other things while you're walking. You're going to distract yourself when you're chewing gum. But when we just normally walk in the real world, let's say you're going, I don't know, you're going to take your kid for an ice cream cone. They've been really good that day. They ate all their dinner. Even they had Brussels sprouts. You're going to take them for an ice cream cone. On that walk, what are you thinking about? So you're walking. You're already doing motor planning. You're thinking about where you're putting that feet. You're thinking about where your son is in 3D space. There's somebody approaching you. You're actually doing a mental prediction because you're seeing where that person's walking and where they will be in the future so you don't run into them. There's audible distractions around you all the time. You're thinking about how to get to that ice cream store. So you're using working memory and what you're going to buy when you get there. It's an amazing amount of mental energy. And because it's multitasking, it pushes all that activity to the front of the brain. And so what ends up happening is as we age, unfortunately, the part of the brain that ages the most is that same part that handles what they call executive function, or really that multitasking capability. We lose that ability to multitask as we age. And this is why we struggle with gait. And this is why we fall, because when we get into a situation where we cannot handle all these kind of motor and cognitive tasks simultaneously, the brain will, for lack of a better description, shut down. It will decide not to do certain things. So you might forget where you're going, right? The working memory might fall away. You may run into somebody, right? Because you weren't predicting where they would be accurately. But also you can lose that motor planning. So you plant your foot incorrectly, and then you will fall. In fact, if you ask an older adult, so two things are really fascinating. One is the overwhelming majority of falls in otherwise, I would say, healthy older adults, A, they fall while they're moving. They fall walking up the stairs, down the stairs, walking on flat ground, but they're typically moving or walking. And if you ask them why they fell, they'll tell you, I wasn't paying attention. But it's not their fault. It's what's happening in the brain. So realizing that walking is really, or successful walking, is really a cognitive task. That was the inspiration behind Gait Better. How do I retrain the brain so I can reduce falls, I can become more confident and stay mobile for a longer portion of my older adult life? That was kind of the genesis of Gait Better.
Amazing. Thanks. That's really interesting. And the way you kind of walked us through that journey from start to finish really kind of clicks. And I think it makes sense to a lot of people. At the same time, I don't think I ever wanted Brussels sprouts and ice cream at the same time as much. So thank you for triggering my hunger as well.
Right.
So that makes sense from a conceptual standpoint now. So going back a little bit into the Gait Better solution, can you tell me a little bit more how you bring those concepts and kind of the science behind everything you just described to life through a tangible product and solution for communities?
100%. So imagine you're this researcher. So figured out that, I mean, again, it's more than just them, right? It is, I think, a pervasive awareness understanding among people who are experts in this area. Sorry. So we know walking is a cognitive task. So how do I create something that's going to be useful to older adults? So what's great about this team, they're gerontologists, they're neurologists, they're physical therapists, and they all kind of got together in the room and they brainstormed. You know, we used to brainstorm in the same room before COVID, very antiquated idea. So they all brainstorm, right? And they also, the neurologist came to the table with an awareness of kind of what they call the neuroscience of aging. So if I'm going to retrain the brain, if I need a brain exercise, what are some important key aspects in order to retrain the brain successfully? And so it's quite fascinating, Patrick. So the first is, as we get older, and it has to do partially with like how are the connectivity between the different parts of the brain, we are less able to skill transfer or to transfer skills from one activity to another. And the best thing I'll give you is, let's go back to your son who likes to eat Brussels sprouts and ice cream. So your son's going to be the next Mike Trout, amazing baseball player. So his coach is most likely teaching him certain skills that your son will be able to transfer onto the field, like how to catch or hit or whatever it is. As we get older, we lose that ability. And a good example of that is they did a big study about how, you know, older adults are supposed to do crossword puzzles to stay cognitively sharp. Well, they found out if you have an older person, you have them do lots of crossword puzzles, they get really good at crossword puzzles. That's it. So number one, if I want to retrain the brain, I have to put it through an activity that is similar to what it experiences in the real world. That means I need to be walking, and I need to have cognitive challenges that are almost exactly the same as the cognitive challenges I experience in the real world. I have to do motor planning. I have to hear sounds. I have to see things coming towards me. I have to have a destination. So that's really important. The second is they find out that neuroplasticity, which is, I will admit, an overused word, unfortunately, in a lot of health tech. But in order to really form those new connections, I need to have an elevated heart rate. I won't get into the whole physiology, but when I elevate my heart rate, there's actually a synergistic almost effect in terms of neuroplasticity. If I am sitting on my rear end, you will not see as much of a neuroplasticity, even if you're doing the exact same thing that if you were walking, or even just kind of an elevated heart rate. So there's a couple other kind of key things, but those are the two important things. So realizing that, they came together and decided to utilize kind of what we'll call semi-immersive virtual reality in front of a treadmill. So what does that mean? So Gait Better works with any existing treadmill. It is not a treadmill. It just works with any existing treadmill. And what they do is they have a camera. They put a camera in front of a treadmill and it watches your feet as you walk on that treadmill. And then it presents these disembodied feet that represent the movement, your gait movement onto a TV screen in front of you. So if you lift your left foot, the left foot on the TV screen moves. You move your right foot, the right foot on the TV screen moves. And so these disembodied feet are in a virtual reality environment. And so they, as they walk through this environment, we give them a number of motor and cognitive challenges that very much are applicable to real world. So you start off with a map. You're going to that ice cream parlor. So you have to remember, how am I going to get there? Is it two lefts and a right? Is it two rights and a left? You have to remember that. As I'm walking through this environment, it can be a crowded, noisy environment. It can be a gentle, quiet environment. We actually adjust it based upon people's cognitive capabilities, for example. It's like weightlifting. You don't give somebody who's lifted weights for years a 200-pound bench press. We start them off slowly. We do a very similar thing here. And then again, we give them these kind of cognitive challenges. They have to see people coming. They have to overcome curbs and puddles. They hear noises like planes and birds and cats and dogs and people, all the stuff you would see. And we do it in a very methodical and structured way. So it's almost like strength training again. I'll go back to that analogy. By the time they've gone through 12, 15 sessions, those new neural connections have formed and they are much more confident walking in these real world environments.
That's amazing. You're hearing more and seeing more about virtual reality. You know, the more I talk to people about virtual reality, the more I experience and, you know, go to conferences and read about it. There's so many different use cases for it now than we just kind of typically think of, or at least I did, had a bias towards what virtual reality meant. And there's the gaming experience side of it, right? There's the educational side of it. There's the experiential side of it. And this is a whole new, for me, concept and use case for it that just seems so advanced in so many different nuances from a technology standpoint. How did we get here? What's kind of the background of where we came and how we got to this point where we can actually use this in the way that you just described as an end user to experience all those different things?
Gate-Better concept really has been about 15 years in the making, right?
Wow.
And so that kind of speaks to, there's all these different use cases of VR, but if we really think about it, the idea of VR has been around now for probably over 20 years, but it takes a while to kind of launch. And so I want to say, really going back as far as like 2008, 2007, the team that eventually would develop the predecessor for Gate-Better was already thinking about this whole neuroplasticity and, you know, what is the best tool to drive these new neural connections and deciding that virtual reality was the best approach. They actually tried a fully immersive approach first. Rather than the TV screen, which we call semi-immersive, they actually tried using the goggles. But goggles don't work really well if you're trying to hit some of those key neuroscience facts about aging. Number one is, I need to be walking. I need to be walking because I need to be doing the same thing I do in the real world, right? Because we struggle with skill transfer. And I need an elevated heart rate. I need to be moving somehow. I need to be maybe breathing hard a little bit. So when they tried kind of virtual reality, they ran into two big problems. The one is, if you want to laugh, type in VR walking into YouTube and watch the thousands of people running into their children, into the wall, into the kitchen counter. So if you can't see where you're going, you're not going to be very good at walking. But also, older adults really struggle with that single focal plane that you're forced into when you have VR goggles. So VR goggles definitely have, there's some amazing research out there on what they can do, especially from like a pain management. But most of that is geared towards younger adults. When you move into older adults, after about 10, 15, maybe at most 20 minutes, older adults start getting nauseous. They get dizzy because again, the eye is not used to just looking at a single focal plane and it's forced into that situation with the VR goggles. So we looked at the VR goggles, but eventually kind of knowing some of the limitations, that's how we chose the semi-immersive instead.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense because even if you're on a treadmill and walking and not using this solution, just simply looking at a television screen or, you know, whatever it might be in front of you, it seems to be a similar experience from its simplest form that someone would be accustomed to or used to. It's just doing a lot more, obviously, for the person.
It's a great point. Who has not seen a TV in front of a treadmill, right?
Right.
This is not a scary new thing. You're going to be very familiar now. Most older adults are typically on a treadmill or not really walking at all. This is part of the problem. So we also provide small safety system. It helps in two ways. So one, we find that senior living staff that are worried about putting, it's, I guess, I think everyone would find understand this is kind of amusing. On the one hand, a lot of these new senior living communities have these amazing gyms. We've all seen them. They're gorgeous. They have the latest technology. At the same time, senior staff are very nervous about senior living residents as being on that same treadmill. So we have a very simple little safety system in place. So when the person gets on there, I mean, we're going to challenge them, right? We're asking them to do things beyond what they normally do. That's intentional. Just like you get stronger in weightlifting because you're lifting weights that are heavier than you would lift in the real world. Same basic idea. We're going to give you cognitive challenges that are heavier than what you would experience in the real world. And so in case you're worried about like stumbling or something like that while you're on this treadmill, we have a little safety system to keep everybody safe and confident in terms of that training activity.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And obviously a really crucial piece, I imagine, of the considerations that were taken in implementing this. And so as I think about this, I think about at the community level, how is this being spearheaded? Who's kind of taking it upon themselves to work? Is it in more in like the rehab, physical therapy side of things? Or where does this tangibly happen in the senior living community? And then build upon that, not to ask too many questions at once, but as my mind keeps racing, I imagine there's a whole lot of data and insights that you're able to collect from what is actually being experienced for each individual person during this process. Can you talk a little bit about those two things and how that's all ties together and is being used to kind of ensure healthy and safe residents or patients who are utilizing this?
So it's a great question. I think we're still figuring out, Patrick, what is really the most effective implementation for our senior living customers. We definitely have those that place it within a rehab gym and it's being supervised by trained clinicians like physical therapists or physical therapy assistants. And that's been very effective. There are limitations there. Not every senior living resident is going to physical therapy. If they're going to physical therapy, typically they need or they're looking for a doctor's referral. Some rehab gyms are relatively small in some of the communities. Some don't have a treadmill. And then there's obviously, you get into the whole like cost and reimbursement kind of situation. They can't use, you know, they can only use Gate Better for a certain amount of time or a certain number of sessions. There are some restrictions and it tends to be reactionary. Somebody maybe has fallen or maybe has had a stroke, then they'll get access to the Gate Better system. In some senior living communities, it's more on the fitness side. Especially what we've been hearing is a lot of operators have these gorgeous gyms. They're great about attracting new residents, but once they're in, they don't really get utilized too much, except for maybe a couple operators here and there. And so you have this underutilized asset. You've spent a ton of money on these wonderful pieces of equipment. Nobody's going in to use them. And it goes to speak a little bit, you go back to that whole gamification. It is the other real strength about Gate Better. I mean, you have the clinical aspect, which is really just really powerful in terms of the numbers that come out. But there's also the gamification side of things. It's fun. You can watch yourself improve your score. It's a game very much geared towards older adults. There's no explosions or space aliens or gore. It's really right at their speed. And we've seen, especially for certain residents who are not joiners, they don't want to really do anything, get attracted and they come back. They really utilize this facility. So it's a long way of saying, I don't really know. Sometimes it's the rehab gym. Sometimes it's the fitness gym. It can go in either location. We make a small change to the operator screen. So it's a little more push button for the fitness gym because nobody's really there. It's just the resident or the gym supervisor. We're in the rehab environment. We make it a little more, they have a lot more levers they can pull because they're clinical experts. And then you're right. What's really also nice about this intervention, let's say compared to classes, is we really can track each person's progress. So it's great. We have table, we have graphs that really show. I did this actually, one of my motivations for joining Gate Better with my father-in-law, Vietnam veteran, had a massive stroke 4 years ago. And then unfortunately now also on medication that increases his risk for falls. So we decided to put him on Gate Better. And, you know, after 3, 4, 5 sessions, really got into the score, how far he had walked, whether he was walking farther than the time before, whether he was walking faster. And he really could see it. It was all being displayed in front of him. And it was all something that me and him would review once his session was done, how much better he had done compared to the previous time period. So it's right. The gamification really provides a wonderful motivational aspect to it.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm glad you touched on, there is a gamification side of it in addition to the clinical side as well. Being able to tie in something that's both mutually beneficial as a from a clinical perspective, as well as something that's even socially and just fun and engaging in that sense, you can do both those things at the same time, especially in the senior living setting. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. So that's fantastic. Thanks for touching on that. So a curiosity standpoint, are there a lot of other solutions like this in the space? I mean, I know we talk about all these different things maybe, and I can think of some solutions that are trying to combat some of the falls. Prevention, of course, is a hot topic. There's different solutions, but as far as tying it all together in this sense, is there anything else out there that you all are aware of or coming against in the space?
Oh, 100%. What's interesting, of course, is what does fall prevention mean? How do you initiate fall prevention? So it's really quite fascinating. I would say most of the efforts in the technology space around fall prevention is around what I would more describe as fall detection or fall prediction. So for example, there's a wonderful company that has a scale that you stand on the scale, and based upon, I think, how you balance, they'll predict whether or not you're at risk for falls. There's a couple of camera systems they'll put in somebody's room and kind of observe how they move or whether they're moving in a certain way. In fact, I was just on a call with somebody. There's even like a mattress or almost like a pad you can put on a bed. And depending on how somebody is rolling, you can predict whether they fall. We don't see a lot on the fall treatment side in technology. Really kind of, I would say, the detection or prediction, but not so much on the treatment side. And those that are on the treatment side, they have some value, but from what I've seen in the literature, right, they provide a similar value to existing interventions. So how do senior living communities deal with falls? They really deal with them in one of three ways. They offer classes. That's typically for the more for like independent living, typically, maybe a little assisted living. So you're talking about like Tai Chi or Steady, right? These group classes where they work on balance, for example, a lot. There's what's called multifactorial interventions. So they'll look at the resident and look at their medication, whether they need glasses, so their eyesight, their hearing, making sure there's no rugs, making sure the room is well lighted, those kind of things. And then there's physical therapy. But we find, and again, it goes back to that whole neuroscience of aging. What you find is because all those interventions typically, A, are not really hitting the cognitive, not really acknowledging that cognitive is really a key, if not the key aspect of successful walking. And the skills or the activity they're introducing does not really correlate with real world. Again, a great example is Tai Chi. Tai Chi, wonderful exercise, but again, you're kind of standing still. You're not really walking. These what are called meta-analyses, or these studies of studies. There's one that comes out every 3 years, has hundreds and hundreds of studies on fall prevention. They find it actually doesn't really matter what it is. Physical therapy, multifactorial, these different types of fall prevention classes, they all have a fall reduction rate of about 25% across the board. Whereas Gait Better approaches close to 70%. I mean, this is why I'm so inspired to work for Gait Better. It's why I'm so inspired to reach out to these senior livings, because I really do think it's going to be a game changer. And the game changer is that it's really based upon the fundamental whys of why do we fall.
I love that. And you simplified it for me in my mind, because again, I think you put it great when you said there's fall prevention, there's fall detection. This is really fall treatment, because you're doing something physically and cognitively to help prevent this in the long run. That isn't just simply, okay, walk more or work out more or do this specific activity. This is combining everything in one to really address the root issue. So I really appreciate that perspective. I think that's a great thing to kind of end on. But before we wrap up, I do want to give you an opportunity. I think this was such a really educational session for me. I think our listeners are really going to enjoy it as well. I think you speak very well to this solution and the impact it has on senior living communities. But before we wrap up today, is there any other final thoughts that you want to make sure that you share with our listeners, or any other types of words of wisdom that you might have before we part ways today?
Maybe one. And I hope no one takes offense. I'll apologize ahead of time.
Here we go.
So Gait Better has been very successful in Israel. But something like 90%+ of the Israeli population have access to Gait Better. It's really become the standard of care. If somebody's at considered a risk of falls, or they themselves can kind of self-refer, they can go almost anywhere in Israeli society to experience Gait Better. It can be in a hospital, in an outpatient clinic, at a senior center, in a senior living community gym, all over the place. And we do, to be very transparent, we hear some concerns from the senior community here in the US. They find it potentially maybe too risky or a little scary to put one of the residents on a treadmill, to force that resident to do some challenging physical and cognitive tasks. It could be just we're litigating litigation kind of nervous here in the US, possibly. And so I tell them it is that, listen, the risk is far lower than you might expect, and the benefit is so much better. One thing my Israeli colleagues like to talk to me about in the US is we need to be a little more willing to make that jump, make that leap, and we'll see really significant benefits. So that's what I would tell you. I'm old, or I think I'm still young, but you know, I feel those aches in the morning, and then I'm sure they'll just get worse as I get older. So right, they're handling people. They're handling our parents and our grandparents and those who want to know that those parents and grandparents are being kept safe. And I think the mentality is going to do well to keep them safe. I don't want them to do anything that looks scary. I'm going to kind of almost put them in a cocoon. But you also have to realize there's this use it or lose it aspect to our bodies and our mind. We have to challenge ourselves on a daily basis when we really kind of end up going in the wrong direction. And so I think Gatebiter is a very effective way of challenging. It doesn't take too long, 15 sessions and they're done. So we're not asking to do it every day. But when you see that leap and you see those results, I think it'll be just an overall benefit to the community and to the staff as well.
Awesome. Well, that's what it's all about. Well, Craig, thanks so much for the conversation today. I personally learned a lot. I think our listeners will too. So thanks for taking the time out of your day to tell us a little bit more about your story and about Gatebiter.
My pleasure, Brad. Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And listeners, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Raising Tech. Hope you picked up some valuable information you can take back to your organization today. And if there are any topics you want to hear about in particular or want to be on an episode yourself, please feel free to reach out on our website at parasolalliance.com. Have a good one.